You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, if you say so, welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom, carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, October 2nd, 34 days until Election Day, and I like the people that give us occasional reminders that we were very smart to set up a text line. Sure, you could call us 855-75-CIVIC, but you can also text us 855-75-CIVIC, and Greg Bach and meteorologist Brittany Merlot. We were talking earlier about things like, you know, did you name one of your cars? Michael Intosa writes in, good morning, Pat. My silver work car is named Sterling, and our red minivan is called Ruby. Brittany, you ever name any of your vehicles?
Oh, yes. I have a Jeep Wrangler right now, and I named it Natural Disaster. It's got the name on it, too, on the hood. So okay. Everybody knows.
First off, I didn't know you were a Wrangler girl.
How did you not know that? Come on.
I did not know that. I mean, I've been driving Wranglers for forever here.
All right, I'll just see you guys later.
All right, fine. How many rubber duckies have you collected over the years?
Oh, quite a few. I've got all my green and yellow ones in the dash because my Jeep is the neon green, that bright, bright one.
Do you duck anybody, or do you 100%. Just get ducked?
Okay. I've got the duck it bucket in the back.
What
I'm ready to go.
Are you talking about
the Jeep Wave?
The Jeep Wave all the time.
Is a Jeep thing? You wouldn't get it. I don't.
No, it's a Jeep thing you wouldn't understand. But exactly. We've made the Wrangler owners so happy out here with our little Jeep traditions. And poor Greg. All right, I suppose we'd better transition over to the weather here, which
Hey, where are my Honda Insights at? Prius wannabes?
Nope. Nothing. I'm hearing crickets. That's about it. This weather is lovely. It's not so hot and humid like we once had to deal with. It feels like a perfect transition into the seasons here, Brittany.
Oh, it really does. The sunshine is helping with that. It's adding to the transition. I'm enjoying it. But those winds, oh my goodness, kind of feisty. And they're going to be that way again today, too. We've got another cold front moving in. So the further north you live, the stronger the winds are going to be. We're looking at 40-mile-per-hour gusts possible in the northern half of the state, probably around 20 to 30-mile-per-hour gusts in the southern half of the state today. And with the temperatures making it to the mid-70s, where it's going to be the windiest, because the winds are actually pulling out of the south. So the stronger they are, the warmer you are. Our temperatures are going to be a little flipped around today into those upper 60s for the rest of the state. And, of course, we still have a high fire danger. It's spread now across a good chunk of Wisconsin. So anywhere from La Crosse and Juneau counties north, from Marathon and Shawano counties north as well, you're in a very high fire danger risk there. So no burning. Be careful. Otherwise, enjoy the day. Pretty comfortable, like Pat said.
And since we don't have any significant rain anytime soon, you're going to get sick of hearing one of two things. Hopefully, you get sick of hearing be careful with fire out there until we get significant rain, as opposed to, you know, we don't want you to get sick of hearing that another, you know, major grass fire or wildfire has broken out someplace. So please get sick of us saying the former rather than the latter. Brittany, thank you so much. I'm so glad to hear about the Wrangler. This is great. Oh, wait, let's not forget Rob from Tigerton says, good morning. It is clear, 40 degrees. Uh-oh, there's a word we haven't seen yet. A wind chill of 37. Yeah. He did not crank the furnace up, he says, heading to Wausau to meet with a lawyer, doing paperwork. Had lunch at Rachel's Roadside in Wittenberg, and Rachel says hi to you all. And that he had the shrimp tacos, and that his Chevys are the Green Machine and the Big Beast. So he, too, is a car namer. So
I like it. The Green Machine.
Oh, wait. Lynn from Oconomowoc just wrote in on Facebook. Little Gray is my 87 Corolla. Red was my 2012 RAV4. Snowball was my white 2014 Camry hybrid.
Snowball.
I had no idea. So much car naming.
Hybrid life. Hybrid life.
Wait, Craig, did you name yours? I may have missed it.
Oh, thanks for caring.
You're welcome.
It's Steve.
It's Steve.
Perfect.
Thank you, Brittany.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be hearing from Gina Raimondo. She is the former governor of Rhode Island. She is the current U.S. Commerce Secretary, but has been acting more in her personal capacity lately as a surrogate for the Biden-Harris campaign. I'm sorry, for the Harris-Walz campaign. And we talked to her yesterday on her way into Wisconsin to do some work along with Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff. And we'll play back some of that interview tomorrow. And then there's the Up North News Daily newsletter. And did you know, Greg Bach, that Wisconsin has a what's known as a cemetery to the stars? It would be Forest Home Cemetery in Milwaukee. It is the final resting place of many beer barons, politicians, and social elite. They include Fred Usinger of Usinger Sausage, Joseph Schlitz of the Schlitz Brewing Company is there, Edmund Fitzgerald, the former chair of Northwestern Mutual, Frank Lloyd Wright's wife Miriam, and 28 Milwaukee mayors, 7 governors as well. So learn all about Forest Home Cemetery. I thought it was, personally, you're laughing at the cemetery.
I don't know. Yep. There's a beer guy, there's a sausage guy, some dude's wife, because he wouldn't be buried there, and a bunch of mayors.
And a bunch of mayors. When I first moved here to Chippewa Falls 29 years ago, I was passing by one of the cemeteries, and I noticed a rather large monument there. And I thought, well, I'm going to go take a little walk over there. It was across from the fairgrounds. And sure enough, the original Jacob Leinenkugel was buried in that particular cemetery. It's like, oh, okay. You just never know. Up North News reporter, or wait, let me finish the commercial for the newsletter. Sign up for that newsletter and learn all about Milwaukee's Cemetery to the Stars at upnorthnewswi.com. Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro is here now. How are you?
Quite tired today, Pat. Not going to lie.
Yeah, look at that. It's been a unanimous response from everybody here. You were at a debate watch party. First, I feel like we've got to go through the compulsories. Did you, in fact, name your car, your first car, or any of your cars as well?
Only one, and it was a hand-me-down after my first vehicle died after about 9 months of driving it. My mom got a new car, and I drove her old Suburban. So it was a 1993 teal Suburban. We called it the teal tank. It was very early 90s.
The teal tank. I like that. Mine was a 73 Plymouth Fury. And it was green, as everything was in the early 70s. And it was starting to basically rust away. It was a pile. So we just, because we didn't want to use a naughty word, we just referred to it as the green pile was my first car. Now, having set that aside, Elizabeth and the rest of us are a little tired because the campaign rolls on and on into our final 5 weeks here. That included the vice presidential debate last night between Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. And you were at a party put on by, was it the Milwaukee County Democratic Party, or who was putting that on?
Yes, and the coordinated campaign. It was a couple groups that had a watch party on the northwest side of Milwaukee, and it was a pretty full room. They actually had to change venues last minute with, I think, more RSVPs than they were originally anticipating. I would say at any given time there was about 60 people in the room, but very merry group walking in, as you would expect at these things, lots of pizza. I had already eaten dinner, or I would have grabbed a slice of that Ian's mac and cheese pizza myself.
The mac
always
and
a
cheese.
Favorite of mine.
Yes, yes.
And
did you have
a great watch?
Any particular VIPs in attendance there?
Yes, actually, one that I had a chance to chat with afterward, a former student of Governor Walz was there. He's originally from Mankato, but lives in the Milwaukee area now, and had a chance to catch up with him after the debate.
All right, let's give a listen to one of these former students of Governor Walz.
I thought it was great. I like seeing my former teacher, Tim Walz, Mr. Walz, to me, speaking up for what he believes in. That's one of the things I remembered about him as a teacher, that he was very principled, but also very open to that respectful discussion. He was my teacher 20 years ago, so it's been a while. But I'll say when people see him and they're like, oh, that must have been what he was like in the classroom, it really was. He really did have that same commitment to his principles and to hearing people out. One of the things I remember from his class is that he really encouraged healthy, robust discussion and respectful discussion. And that's what he's still doing, I think. And so I'm very pleased to see that. And that's what I'd like to see more of, honestly.
Without a doubt. And I wanted to ask you as well from a crowd perspective, because I know we've seen some reaction from Dan Schaefer, our friends from Motherhood for Good. There appeared to be strong reaction to the way that J.D. Vance answered questions on reproductive health rights and about January 6th and, you know, who won the 2020 election. Did you get a sense that those topics were, you know, got a lot of reaction at the watch party?
Absolutely. You know, I wasn't really sure, given that this was an open invitation. It was definitely a mixed group in the room. So you could have any number of reactions, right, with a wide variety of ages and demographics. But that said, I think the largest response that was elicited in the room was actually earlier when J.D. Vance made the comment about guns being a bigger problem in the cities, and being in the city of Milwaukee, the room was not too fond with that comment.
Well,
not
again,
too happy with that comment.
It's just so easy to blame, you know, the cities rather than the guns and how they get into those cities. A lot of people like to blame, a lot of Republicans blame, you know, gun safety laws in the cities, conveniently ignoring that a lot of the guns are brought into the city from places that don't have those kinds of gun safety regulations. Well, Elizabeth Montemurro, thank you so much for attending the watch party, for bringing us a little bit of reaction. Hope today's a little bit more restful, and we'll talk to you a little later.
Sounds great. Thanks, Dad.
All right. Thank you. When we come back, we'll go through some of the notes about what was talked about at the debate party and a couple of things that Donald Trump said during his Wisconsin visit as well. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. There you go. The late Alan O'Day, born this day in 1940, part of today's history lesson. I'm back at Wooddale, the skating rink in Woodbury, Minnesota, where your parents would drop you off, you know, in time for it to open up at noon and come back and get you at 3 o'clock before the next group of skaters could come in. And you just go around and around and around, and you try to get fancy, and the skate guard would be like, knock that off.
We're not doing tricks today, Kreitlow.
We're not doing tricks today. Yep. Such an exciting childhood that we had. The Brewers lost in their first game of the wild card round 5-0 to the New York Mets. So it's a do or die time for the Mets pregame at 6 o'clock. And you can catch the game on Civic Media stations in Richland Center. We've seen Kenosha, Park Falls, and Oshkosh. I don't know, Greg, where else to go with that, except that we've lost 10 of the last 11 playoff games dating back to 2018. So yeah. It's been a very exciting season. There's still ample room for the excitement to continue, but they got to stop doing this thing that they do in the playoffs. I don't know quite how to describe it.
I mean, but it also comes down to if we can't beat the Mets 2 out of 3 games, what are our likely chances against teams we want to come up against, say, like, you know, the Dodgers, if they make it through, or, you know, it's just, It does. I want them to barrel through. I want them. Right. I wanted them to steamroll the Mets. I wanted them to go. I mean, at least get to round two. I'm tired of this winning a division and then being knocked out in the wild. I'm tired of winning the division and having to go to the wild card. I want that bye week.
It's like I'm back in Minnesota talking to all my Vikings family again. I'm tired of winning this and we never get any farther. Like, yeah, we know. We live it on the baseball side of things, trust me. All right, well, back to the vice presidential debate here. I want to go over a few notes, and then I want to play a couple of clips from former President Trump, who was in Dane County and Milwaukee County yesterday. And definitely got a little bit of attention for the things that he said, not necessarily in a positive way. But if you didn't get to watch the debate, I'll take you through by saying that, you know, in the beginning, Governor Tim Walz made clear that there were plenty of people who don't think that Donald Trump has earned a term to head back to the White House. He pointed to the dozens and then hundreds of former Trump aides and associates who have endorsed Kamala Harris because of, you know, the things that Trump did and the things that Trump was promising to do. J.D. Vance's response was to essentially say people need to fear their president, and people feared Trump. And Tim Walz came back to that later and said that's really not a quality that we're looking for in a president. We played earlier a clip from J.D. Vance on the subject of a changing climate, where he said, well, let's just say that that's true, because I don't want to debate any of the weird science that's involved. And said, you know, if it's true, well, what we need to do is we need to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. because we manufacture things cleaner here than in other countries. He said, what are we going to do if all of our solar panels come from China? Well, that was fact-checked later. We get absolutely none of our solar panels from China. We do get solar panels from several other countries. China ain't one of them. But more importantly, his point simply fed into Tim Walz being able to say, yeah, that's exactly what the Biden-Harris administration has been doing these past 4 years, is firing up American manufacturing. American manufacturing is up and strong and only growing through the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS and Science Act, as you create a whole new energy, a whole new generation of clean energy jobs. My one big fault with the moderators was that they asked J.D. Vance three different times, what does it look like when you say you're promising mass deportations? And he never answered it, and they never pressed him on it to describe what is this, you know, almost dystopian scene of families being ripped on, separated and ripped apart and put on buses and everything. He should have been forced to describe how exactly he thinks that's going to work, but he never did. And in fact, when he got fact-checked about the Haitian migrants in Ohio, and how they are, in fact, here legally. And he tried to nitpick the program, even though the moderators said, we're moving on, we're moving on, we're moving on. He was trying to bully on through. Really great look talking over the two women for over a minute, until finally somebody at CBS cut his mic. And that's what finally got him to stop talking. So congratulations to whoever it is at CBS that figured out you do have a button on the microphone and that you can, you know, you can turn it out. You can turn it off when somebody wants to just bully their way through in a very Trumpian manner. We discussed the prospects for a national abortion ban under Trump, and that J.D. Vance says this actually should be with the states and people should vote on abortion rights state by state. Tim Walz responding, no, there is just some basic human rights and healthcare rights that should not be a matter of voting state by state. And he would like to see the, you know, what we had under Roe v. Wade put back into place here. There was a lot of course, J.D. Vance blaming immigration for all manner of woes, saying that, you know, when you bring 25 million immigrants in, it's going to drive up the cost of housing. And I don't know. I'm not sure that a 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath colonial, you know, in Hayward, Wisconsin, I'm not sure that it's immigrants that are causing the market to be tight. It might be a really tight housing supply and a host of other factors. But immigrants apparently make a very easy target on here. One of my favorite lines was when J.D. Vance talked about how under Trump, his family was finally able to get health care. I laughed out loud because it was like, well, no, that wasn't Trump that did that. That was the Affordable Care Act under Obama that your family started to take advantage of, you know, during the Trump presidency. All in all, a lot of Midwestern nice going on in there. But there were also moments like J.D. Vance near the end, again, refusing to just say definitively that Joe Biden won the 2020 presidential election. And that, as you heard me discuss earlier with Elizabeth, that made an impression on people that for all of J.D. Vance's attempts to sound like a moderate Midwesterner, he is still the person who's on that ticket instead of Mike Pence because of his expressed willingness to cast doubt on the 2020 election and to cast doubt on the results of this election if the results don't go the way that they would like them to. And that's a big red flag for a lot of voters. All right, when we come back, some of the things that Donald Trump said in his Wisconsin visit yesterday. We'll talk to Dan Cannon, battleground director for the Harris-Walz campaign, about winning in Wisconsin. And we'll have our homeroom segment with author Jennifer Berkshire on parents pushing back against the continued trend toward trying to demolish public education. All that and more ahead here on Up North News Radio on this Wednesday. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio. We're joined now by author Jennifer Berkshire. Her book, we talked about it with her last visit here in July, The Education Wars, A Citizen's Guide and Defense Manual. When she spoke here last time, the subject of it was from the boardroom to the ballot box, getting organized to win for students in their public schools, and talking about how people are getting organized to fight back against, well, there's privatization, there's underfunding, there's radical or regressive political agendas, and she writes about it all and is touring the country, including Green Bay here for her most recent appearance. Jennifer Berkshire, thanks for being here on Up North News Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's nice to have you back here. You mentioned before we got started here that your travels have taken you to North Carolina, New Hampshire, Florida, and Iowa, as well as Wisconsin. Can't help but notice there's a couple of battleground states in there, and I'm sure that that's not by accident that Wisconsin isn't the only place where public education advocates are, as we say here, getting organized.
That's absolutely true. And typically what happens when you write a book is that you might travel around and do a little book tour. And this means that you go to a bookstore and that you are speaking to an audience of mostly empty folding chairs. And my co-author and I really didn't want to do that. We wanted to do what we're calling instead an organizing tour. And the goal was to go to as many states where public education is really under threat right now as we possibly could. And as you very smartly observed, it happens that a number of those states are also pivotal in the forthcoming election. Just like in Wisconsin, you find that in places like North Carolina and Iowa and really like all over the place, that people are coming together because they view their public schools as really endangered right now. And so the question about which direction their state is going to go in the upcoming election often has very real and concrete implications when it comes to the way that schools fund and oversee their public schools.
Well, let's start with the underfunding. We've talked about that a lot on this program. It's why you're once again seeing more than 100 school districts going to referendum on November 5th, because they're basically asking local taxpayers to fill the role vacated by a lazy legislature that does not want to hold up its end of the deal funding public schools. Is that a unique circumstance in Wisconsin, or what is the underfunding barrier look like to education in other states?
It is absolutely not a unique circumstances. And so I'll give you an example. I mentioned that I was in North Carolina. So recently, their Republican supermajority passed an enormous voucher expansion. Starting next year, North Carolina will spend more than $600 million a year to pick up the tab for mostly for parents who already sent their kids to private school. Think about what that money could pay for. It could pay for teacher raises. It could pay for investment in facilities. And so you're seeing basically these states say to school districts that are already underfunded and to the parents who send their kids to school there and who've been demanding greater investment for years, they're basically telling those parents, you know what, we're not going to do that. Instead, we're going to shift a growing percentage of our state resources into the pockets of more affluent parents. And so I think, just like you're seeing in Wisconsin, that there is a rebellion going on among these parents. And it's so key that you pointed out all those referenda, because that's one of the clearest indicators we have that parents and communities are not happy with the state of affairs that's coming down from Madison and other state capitals.
No, they're not. Nor are they happy with these political agendas, which you could call regressive or radical. And I know we often hear the word radical coming from, you know, the side of the fence that wants to underfund public schools and support privatization. But I think there's something rather radical about the notion of underfunding public education and specifically targeting, you know, people from the LGBTQ communities, among students, teachers, staff. We're talking about book bans more than ever before. And it's that political agenda, I sense, that is also getting people to start showing up at some of these events you're speaking at.
Absolutely. And more there is an awareness among people on the ground that the culture wars and all of this, you know, intense animosity that's been directed at the schools in a way that you just so nicely laid out, that that's really being used not just as a screen to justify school privatization, but that you have these same groups and deep-pocketed donors and politicians fanning the flames in order to then justify continued underfunding schools or moving away from a public system altogether. And so I think that that's absolutely driving interest in the issue, and it's causing people to, you know, to, I think, question a lot of the policies that are being handed down from their state legislators and conservative governors.
So with only 5 weeks left till Election Day, I know that a lot of people who wanted to be involved are involved, or with any number of groups, their local political party, some other kind of advocacy group. But is it too late for anybody who now hears this and wants to be involved in some way? If not, what's your advice to them?
It's absolutely not too late. And my number one piece of advice is strike up a conversation with someone, and that you will find that even for people for whom politics and these intense ideological debates often feel far away, that they can make sense of this stuff when you talk about it in terms of what it means for the local schools and the local community. And I'll give you an example. There's so much talk right now about Project 2025. And I'm amazed as I travel around that the thing that I hear people point to over and over again is the promise that they're going to eliminate the Department of Education. Because I think to a lot of people, that means that their government will cease to support and fund public schools. Now, if you know a lot about this stuff, you know that actually, like, our public schools are much more of a state entity, that the feds provide very little funding, relatively speaking. But to me, like, I see that as an organizing opportunity. There's something that people are worried about. Let's get that conversation going.
Jennifer Berkshire is co-author of The Education Wars, A Citizen's Guide and Defense Manual. Great to talk to you again, Jennifer. Thank you so much. Safe travels to you.
Thank you so much, Pat. It's always a pleasure to come on your show.
Well, it's nice to have her back as well. Now let's pivot over back to the campaign. I first got to know Dan Cannon in the state capitol. I was a senator. He was chief of staff to Senator Bob Jauch. He has since become very busy on the national scene from a campaign standpoint, to the point where he is now a battleground director for the Harris-Walz campaign. And I got to catch up with him yesterday as the campaigns continue to crisscross the Midwest, including Wisconsin. And Dan Cannon joins us now to talk about the state of the campaign. DK, how are you?
I'm great, Pat. How are you doing?
Wonderful. It is so good to see you. It's been a while since our state capital days together, but you are doing wonderful things on the national scene. Obviously, you know, from a national campaign standpoint, we see momentum from the Harris campaign. We see, you know, Trump doing Trumpian things. When you look at the state of the race now, 34 days out, the VP debate is behind us. Where do you see the Harris-Walz campaign in terms of what they have to do to seal the deal in battleground states like Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, with 34 days, Pat, we're still in a very, very close race. And it's something that we've expected this entire time. You know, Wisconsin is one of the seven or so states that has been a true toss-up. And I don't mean a toss-up like a couple of points or 3 points. I mean, well inside a point. It's looked that way this entire year. It was that way in 2020. It was that way in 2016. Go to the Wayback Machine, 2004, 2000, both races inside a percentage point. There's just a lot of political gravity in this state. And I think that we have to reckon with the reality that we're going to have this tight race. But the thing that we're doing in Wisconsin, and truthfully across the battlegrounds, but Wisconsin's the best example of this, is campaigning everywhere and being in community with people, talking to them, cutting through in a way that's hard, frankly, in a very fragmented media environment otherwise. But we have 50 offices across 43 counties in Wisconsin, 250 staff. We're engaging thousands and thousands of volunteers every single week. Up through now, we've done half a million door knocks, and that's going to just increase exponentially as the race goes on. And that's to say nothing of the thousands and thousands of community events you do, phone banking, trainings, watch parties for the debate like we had last night. All of that, I think, adds to this feeling that you have a community that's caring about the same values, whether it's protecting reproductive freedoms, whether it's lowering costs, whether it's protecting and preserving Obamacare or Social Security and Medicare against this very draconian, mega extreme agenda we see from J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. The stakes are clear, but you have to have people on the ground, especially in a tight race, to cut through the noise and have those conversations, and then to do things like get voters registered, you know, or push them out to vote where they need a little more information, the kind of mechanics that make a tight race winnable. We've been investing in that all year long. Donald Trump has not. And so I don't think you see that in the polls, but we see that very much as a central part of our plan to win a tight race.
Now, you're significantly younger than me, but we're both old enough to remember when people thought we were a little crazy to advocate for Democrats doing more campaigning a decade ago or so in Waukesha County and the Wow counties, and having to remind people that while they may be very high in terms of Republican percentage, they're also high in quantity in terms of Democratic voters. So.
Fair
enough. I've been one of the first to say, of course, a Donald Trump would have to show up in Dane County at some point. And so now he is, because, again, there's a lot of bodies there.
Yeah.
So now that he's done that thing, which is actually not as strange as some people might think, it leads to this question. You talk about being everywhere all the time. What is it that the Harris-Walz team could be doing best in Wisconsin to get that, again, everywhere, all the time thing? It doesn't necessarily mean shaking hands in Waukesha County, but it also means, how have we always talked about it? You can't always just squeeze one more vote out of Dane or Milwaukee counties if you're going to win Wisconsin.
That's very true, Pat. And look, on the Dane County point, and I think you're right, Trump's going there because there's a lot of people in Dane County. It's the fastest growing county in the state. And there's a volume of voters there, whether or not they're highly Democratic, which they are. But in truth, the Dane County performance has been, you know, the Democratic base for sure, right? Showing up again and again and again. But what's happened after 2016, this is true in 18, in 20, in 2022, in some of the off-year elections in 2023, suburban voters, independents, moderate Republicans started leaving the Republican Party and moving into the Democratic column. There's a lot of those suburban votes in and around Madison and Dane County that used to be Republican votes. And I think Trump is trying to go back there. But the reality is those voters, I think, are repelled by this extreme agenda. And I think to your point about what you can be doing differently or better or how we can tackle this challenge, the point I'd make is we've been doing this all year. You know, we built this campaign leadership team in Wisconsin in January, actually December, hired the first wave of folks in January and February, you know, went from a couple dozen, you know, to tens of dozens to hundreds of staff now across the state. They've been talking to these folks the entire time. This is stuff that does not show up in a poll, as I said. But when it comes down to the wire and you have to move votes, you know, just a few votes per county, right? Which is really, at the end of the day, what the margin could end up being in some of these places. And that effort, that margin of effort, as Michael Tyler said, as opposed to margin of error, I think is what's required to win a close race. I don't think Donald Trump and the Trump campaign believes in engaging voters and having a relationship with people. I think they simply want to have the rallies, have the cult of personality, you know, rely on the media and social media to kind of propel them a bit. But we believe that when the race is tight and tough, that's what kind of is the fullback dive, you know, at the goal line, which is a play they don't have in their playbook, Pat.
Yeah, got to make the case and then get people excited to affirm the case at the ballot box. Dan Cannon, it's always so great to talk to you. Thanks for the visit today.
Thanks, Pat.
Always nice to catch up with old friends and colleagues, especially going way back as far as we do, where, and this is to take nothing away from folks like Dan, but when you know them as, like, you know, little Capitol staffers, and then you watch, he starts volunteering for this campaign, working for that campaign,
yeah.
And next thing you know, there's all this talk about Pete Buttigieg on Fox News and how great he is handling the moderator or the newscasters,
yeah,
quote unquote, on Fox.
Yeah.
DK is number two on that list.
DK is amazing.
He is. He's so good at this. Yeah. I wouldn't encourage anybody to pay attention to right-wing media, but if you're channel surfing and you see Dan, you're going to want to listen into that.
Stick around, folks.
Yep. Okay, I'll ask Todd Alba coming up next about some of Donald Trump's comments in Wisconsin. That's up next. You're up north. Ah, yes. Happy birthday to Tiffany. What are you dropping over there, Alba?
It's about that kind of a morning.
How you doing, bud?
It's morning radio, so I'll just say this. I'll paraphrase my high school band teacher who once told me, Todd, you'd lose a body appendage if it wasn't attached. And she was absolutely right. Somewhere in this apartment are my earbuds, and I can't find them. I had them literally 3 minutes
ago. Are they in your pocket?
Thank you, Greg. I checked, and no, they're not. So, yeah.
Okay, please let us know where they turn up, because it's going to be a great answer, whatever it is.
I will.
You know, it's like,
not my other hand.
How did those get in the coffee can? I don't know.
I know.
So, all right, well. That's okay. Hey, I just wanted to share a few notes from the text line here. First off, thanks to Roger and Stevens Point correcting the record. Jack Wagner was not on All My Children. He was on General Hospital when All I Need was a hit back in 1985. We were talking earlier about naming cars from the text line at WAUK. My car is called the Deer Denter. Very good one. This one also from somebody listening to WAUK, either over the air or on the Civic Media app. I love Pat's show because it's always positive and fun. Love hearing about the good things Democrats have done throughout Wisconsin. No car names, by the way. Didn't know it was a thing. Did you name your car?
No, but a quick story. So like I said before this show, I think everybody in your lifetime should either be a taxi driver or an Uber driver. And in my eclectic resume, I drove Uber for a little over a year. And Wisconsin, you know, University of Wisconsin, I took a lot of college kids to the bars, not back to the bars, but to the bars. And this one young couple, this one guy and gal, they got in there. They were 20, 21, I don't know. And this kid gets in, and he's super nice. He goes, and I have a Dodge Ram. And I Ubered in a Dodge Ram, which is unique. And he goes, dude, sweet ride. What's her name? And I'm like, I don't know. I doesn't really have. Oh, dude, you got a neighbor. Like, I name everything. Like, my plants, my car. Like, you got a neighbor, dude.
Or you could make friends. I don't know.
Right? I never did, but yeah.
Okay. Well, good advice to live by. So we've been talking so much about the VP debate, and I'm sure you'll have plenty of reaction to that on your show coming up at noon, that we really haven't talked much about former President Trump being both in Dane County and Milwaukee yesterday. But I did want to get your thoughts on a couple of things here. Although, honestly, as I look at what he said, I really just want to hear about the one, and that was the way that he minimized the traumatic brain injury that is happening to our troops when, you know, Iran fires missiles. Now, in this response, he's asked about this in I forget if it's Milwaukee or in Dane County. But look at how he minimizes this, and look how he gets the name of the country wrong when talking about what's happening in the Middle East.
Attacks from Iran, but also, do you believe that you should have been tougher on Iran after they had launched ballistic missiles in 2020 on U.S. forces in Iraq, leaving more than 100 U.S. soldiers injured?
So, first of all, injured. What does injured mean? Injured means you mean because they had a headache, because the bombs never hit the fort. So just so you understand, there was nobody ever tougher in Iraq. They had no money with me. They would have made any deal with me. I would have had a deal made within, literally, I would have had a deal made within 1 week after the election.
Attacks from Iran, but also...
No, we would not have had a deal made within. And to say about these traumatic brain injuries, oh, you mean a headache. That cut's going to get some traction, I predict, Todd.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I had not heard the actual clip. I read a couple of comments, but to hear it in real time like that, it's disgusting. And I think it speaks again to why so many veterans in particular and active duty military, of course, if you're active duty, you can't really, you're limited to how much you can really say on the record. But for all the folks watching, listening this morning who are veterans, he's speaking to you, and he does not have any regard for your service, for your valor, for your honor. And I think it's disgusting. And as you said, Pat, to minimize those injuries, we still have people that were there in that incident who are suffering, traumatic brain injuries, and it's serious. And we need to, as a country, stand with them, and we need to fully fund and better fund our VA hospitals and take care of those people who are there for us.
Yeah. I mean, because of these ballistic missile blast waves, some of them lost consciousness. Some of them still have post-traumatic amnesia. They continue to have headaches and memory loss to this day. We can talk about the conditions in the Middle East all day long, but don't for a moment say that you would have been better and begin your remarks by minimizing what our troops suffered over there in the Middle East. So back to the VP debate as well. I'm sure that might be topic one out of the gate for you today.
Great job, you and Dan Schaefer and Terry Bell anchoring the Civic Media coverage last night. I was listening in. Pat, of course, will join us along with Trigvi Olsen at noon today. And I thought by and large it was boring. I heard from people who are not so political that said, oh, this is so refreshing. And yeah, I know, I get it. It was the most quote unquote normal type of debate we've had in quite some time, with Donald Trump on the ballot three times. but I thought the two big takeaways were Norah O'Donnell actually not even fact checking, just saying a fact that the immigrants in Springfield, Ohio are legal, and J.D. Vance lost his crap.
Yes,
and
he did.
And then later on in the final part of the debate, when Tim Walz just said, I have a simple question for you, Senator. Who won the 2020 election? And Vance could not say that Joe Biden won. And that's the danger to this country. And Liz Cheney saw it in the January 6th committee. Other people have seen it. That answer alone is disqualifying, in my opinion.
And it was for a lot of people last night. Todd Alba, back at noon. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it. Good luck finding those earbuds.
I'll find them somewhere. Thank you.
All right. Greg Bye. Bach is back at 10 for Matt and Air on Air.
Indeed I am. We got Joe Walsh in the first hour.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Yeah. And thanks to all of you for being part of our festivities here this morning. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.